Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. Monday after what was a very fast week, Travis. And we're not going to touch on this today on the show, but we will later on in the week. We have a chance for another Triple Crown winner in the sport of horse racing.
We do. That horse needs to get some rest, though, because down the stretch Saturday, he looked a little tired.
Justify takes on the Kentucky Derby, takes on the Preakness. Now he's got to get through the Belmont, which is obviously the toughest race out of the three. I don't know how he's going to handle the distance of the Belmont, but to no surprise, he won. And I know it was close. Whatever variables you want to throw in, it was close, but he found a way to get a win. That is a massive storyline going into the brand new week. And outside of that, we do have NBA basketball, where the Eastern Conference Finals, 2-1 in favor of Boston as we gear up for Game 4 tonight. Western Conference Finals, 2-1 in favor of the Golden State Warriors after they shellack the Houston Rockets in Game 3. They'll resume their series tomorrow. And in your sport, hockey, the Las Vegas Golden Knights are 4 wins away from a Stanley Cup championship.
Yes, the Vegas Golden Knights go on the road, beat Winnipeg yesterday, win that series 4-1. So first-year expansion team Vegas into the Stanley Cup. 4 wins away.
Where do you rank this? Because again, you're a hockey guy, and I want you to take your hockey fan bias out of it. But when you look at surprise teams, and this could be college, professional, I don't care. When you look at Cinderella teams, where do you rank Las Vegas? Because I know at the beginning of the year, if you had to bet $100 on them to win it all, it would have paid, what, 50 grand, I think is what it would have paid?
Yeah, they're at 500 to one. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's incredible what they've done. It's got to be up there with probably maybe top three or four all time of things that have happened. I don't think anybody could expect this happen and what they're doing. Yes, the rule set up nicely for them where they could plunk the players away and kind of build off that, but you got to give credit to the GM of Vegas. He went off and got the players he wanted and made some trades with teams so they wouldn't protect the certain players that they wanted. So
what do you mean the rules played in their favor? Explain that.
So with the expansion draft, before the expansion draft, teams could make side deals with Vegas so they wouldn't take certain players from certain teams. So for existence or example, Anaheim, like Hampus Lindholm was a guy that they wanted to protect. So they told Vegas, well, we will trade you a draft pick and you can have Shea Theodore instead. So they kind of got to choose which ones they wanted and then made deals on the side to get assets to make more moves at the deadline.
It was a record deal, a record amount of deals in the offseason, right?
25 or so, maybe even more than that. So
even though the rules set up nicely for them and there are other variables that you can't really throw in with any other
expansion,
You still got to play the game. You still got to win. And when you take a look at what they have at goal as well, I know Pittsburgh Penguin fans,
that guy's a winner, and
they
let him go.
They have a soft spot in their heart for him. Yeah. I get this. But did you expect this type of performance from Vegas at the goalkeeping position going into the year?
No, because Subban and Fleury both were great all year long. So, and then when you get into the playoffs, I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury's been awesome.
Yeah, Fleury's a guy, again, Pittsburgh fans love this guy, right?
Yeah, he's a proven winner. So Vegas is got every breakthrough the playoffs, and they've ran with it, and now they're 4 wins away.
Okay, we can talk hockey here for just a second longer because we have Tampa Bay and the Capitals going toe-to-toe. The Capitals have the best player in hockey in Alexander Ovechkin.
Yes, they do.
Nobody's going to argue that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yet, once again, they are down 3-2.
Up 2-0, lost 3 straight.
It's amazing to me.
Doing what Washington does. They choke playoff series away year after year, and it just seems like this team's never going to get over the hump. So I thought Washington would win the series. It doesn't look that way. It looks like Tampa Bay. It's going to be Tampa Bay and Vegas. And if that's the matchup we get, it's going to be Vegas. Vegas will beat Tampa Bay.
It is, again, it's one of those deals. You know, we talk legacy in the NBA all the time. Does this affect Alexander Ovechkin's legacy? Should. Is it the same way in hockey?
Yeah, it does. You need to get your name on that cup. You have to bring the cup home to Washington. He just hasn't got over that hump. He's ran into Sidney Crosby the last 3 years, and Crosby's knocked him out. He just can't get over that hump. And do you think when you jump up 2-0 that you have that chance, you have all the momentum, and then you lose three straight?
Let's move back over to the NBA. Again, I mentioned the Golden State Warriors absolutely blasting the Houston Rockets in Game 3. The biggest loss by a team that has won 60 games in NBA playoff history.
Yes.
They were thoroughly dominated in this game. They played a semi-competitive first quarter, but you could tell that it just was not going to be Houston's night from that point on. I think it was 28-22 at the end of the first quarter, if I remember right. But you just got the vibe that Houston was going to be in trouble in this game. Good news if you're a Rocket fan. Bad news if you're a Golden State Warrior fan, because Andre Iguodala is now listed as doubtful for tomorrow's game against Houston. Left knee contusion, banged knees with James Harden yesterday in Game 3. He'll have an x-ray a little bit later on today. If it comes back, he could be upgraded to probable. I don't think he goes tomorrow, and I do believe that Andre Iguodala is, I'm not going to say key, but he's important in this series.
He is important. He's a great defender. You can put him on that wing. He can knock down the three-point shot. So, very important to what the Warriors do. I mean, he was the Finals MVP, what, 2 years ago?
Depth in the NBA means more than depth in the NFL or Major League Baseball.
Yes.
And I say that because we're talking about five guys compared to 11, or compared, you know, to nine plus a pitching staff in baseball. Depth is more important, at least in my eyes, in the NBA. Okay, I still don't believe that Golden State has anyone that can fulfill the role of Andre Iguodala coming off the bench. This guy's playing like 28 minutes a game, and as you said, may not be the effective wing defender that he once was, but he's still highly important, still a guy that you need against an offensive-minded team like Houston. I still don't think this series is over. I don't. At the beginning, I said that Golden State would win the series in five. After Houston took Game 2, you think, okay, well, you know, there are things that Houston can exploit. They didn't do that, obviously, in Game 3, and I think the Rockets are back at a similar spot that they were in going into Game 2. Game 4 is as close to a must-win situation as you can get without it being a must-win situation. If they lose Game 4 in Oracle, this series is probably over in 5. But I'm gonna give Houston, they will be more competitive in Game 4. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, see how the Warriors come out and respond, because after that Game 1, they relaxed in Game 2 and was never really in the game. So the Warriors have to come out in Game 4 and put their foot down immediately and not give Houston any life. If they relax again, series is going tied back 2-2 to Houston.
Boston and Cleveland tonight at 6:30 p.m. The Cavaliers have an opportunity to draw even. I think this is a huge game for Boston.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm with you.
Cleveland has the best player in the world, best player in the series. We've seen LeBron do amazing things throughout the entire postseason. For as good as Boston has played defensively and as a team, they've been terrible on the road. If they could take one road game in this series, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we've seen LeBron battle back in series. I don't think he's ever been behind 2-0 to win a series before. But if he can win this game, I'll tell you what, if the Cavs can win this game, it's bad news for the Boston Celtics. Start time of that game is set for 6:30. Let's take a look at the Major League Baseball scoreboard. We're nearing the 50-game mark already, which is crazy. Baseball just kind of flies by. Let's take a look at start times. 5 o'clock hour, the Padres will take on the Nationals. The Nationals swept by the Dodgers after the Dodgers had lost six straight to the Reds and the Marlins. Figure that one out. Scherzer and Strasburg go down. The Nationals are fine in that division. I wouldn't worry about them at all, but the fact remains that looks bad when you lose three games at home to the Dodgers without Hill or without Kershaw. They have a chance to get back on the winning track against the Padres, who are another team from that poor NL West up at this point in time. It's a big series, at least I believe, for the Nationals.
Yeah, for the Nats, it's a team that I don't take seriously because they've proved themselves year in and year out that they can be a great regular season team, but when it gets to the postseason, they pitching lets them down. And the Dodgers, I've been telling you, the Dodgers are fine. The Dodgers are fine.
The Nationals are not.
Nationals are not. I would worry about the Nationals.
5:05, we get the Braves and the Phillies. The Mets will play host to the Marlins. The struggling Diamondbacks, who have now lost 9 out of 10. Zach Greinke is going to be on the mound tonight. He'll go toe-to-toe with the Brew Crew and Chase Anderson at 5:40. The Yankees at 6:05 will take on the Rangers. Bartolo Colon is on the mound for Texas. I just have to throw that out there. Colon and Tanaka, that's a fun matchup, right?
Let me see if Colon can put another gem on like against Seattle, because he pitched very well against Seattle, and he's pitched very well all year, though.
We get Baltimore and the White Sox at 6:10. The Tigers will battle the Twins, the Royals at the Cardinals, and in the nightcap tonight, the Dodgers will look to make it 5 in a row as they take on the Colorado Rockies. Walker Buehler, rookie sensation, will be on the hill. We've got a break for just a moment. Today, it's all baseball on Drive Time Sports. We're going to catch up with Coach Jeff Cincinnatus here in just a moment, and former Major League Baseball pitcher Bill Lasky will join us, and we'll bounce around the Major League ranks to talk about some of the storylines. It's all coming up here on this Monday edition of the show on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. In the 2017-2018 high school sports season came to a close over the weekend as both softball and track and field wrapped up their seasons. And we'll begin with track and field, where the 3A state championship tournament took place at Brigham Young University in Provo. And on the boys' set of the track, the Carbon Dinos finished 8th with 39 points, and Emory finished in 9th with 26. On the girls' side of the track, it was Carbon finishing with 42 points, again finishing 8th, while Emory finished in 16th. Individually, the Dinos fared quite well. In fact, in the 1,600 meters, it was Reagan Hansen finishing in third place. Hansen also finished third in the 3,200 meters. Shannon Baker took home a third place finish in the 400 meters and a seventh place finish in the 200 meters. McKenna Blank finished third in the 800 meters. The Carbon 4x400 team, consisting of Peyton Thomas, Madeline Christensen, McKenna Blake, Shannon Baker, Anna Marie Cartwright, and Isabel Miller, finished in third. In the high jump, it was Emma Christensen finishing fourth. And also in the javelin, Mariana Mulliner finished eighth. Now, on the boys' side of the track, there were state champions crowned. Derek Hillam had an outstanding weekend. He was the state champion in the long jump as he finished first with a 6.54 metric jump. Carson Frame finished in fifth, and Carter Fawcett finished seventh to give the Dinos boys squad a hefty group of points. Derek Hillam also claimed the state championship in the 300-meter hurdles. He finished with a time of 39.64. Other top performers for the Carbon Boys track and field team included their 4x100 squad, consisting of Carson Frame, Jalen Dennis, Carter Fawcett, Derek Hillam, Michael Berra, and McCade Bradley. They finished in fifth. In the 110-meter hurdles, Carson Frame finished seventh, and Carter Fawcett finished eighth in the 400 meters. And that completed the individual points for both Carbon's girls and boys. Now, if we switch to Emory High School, it was Braden Ivey who had an outstanding weekend. He finished second in the 100 meters and also second in the 200 meters, falling to Dallin Draper, the senior from Delta, who set multiple state records over the weekend. Other top individual performances for Emory included Mason Famalo, who finished sixth in the 110-meter hurdles. Famalo also finished eighth in the high jump. Drake Hoffman was sixth in the shot put. Keldon Guyman was seventh in the javelin. For the Emory Lady Spartans, it was Tayden Nielsen finishing sixth in the high jump, and Mackenzie Cox finished sixth in the discus. We move over to the softball field, and the Carbon Lady Dinos fell just two wins away from competing in the state championship contest over the weekend. The Lady Dinos entered Friday going toe-to-toe with the Union Cougars in the quarterfinals and unfortunately suffered a 7-4 loss. That sent Carbon down to the one-loss bracket, where they extended their season by defeating Grand 9-4. The season came to a close just a couple of hours later as Carbon suffered a heartbreaking 11-10 loss to the Manti Templars. All in all, it was Grantsville that picked up the state championship. Grantsville won in both softball and baseball this season. Grantsville defeated Union 6-1 in the state championship game. That was Saturday in Spanish Fork. And we end by moving over to the baseball diamond, where today the Helper American Legion baseball team will hold tryouts at 6 p.m. at Ernie Gardner Field in Helper. Carbon High School manager Jeff Cincinnatus will once again coach the Helper squad, which has now been around for over 55 years. Typically, the Legion team is made up of kids who are seasoned baseball players and have adequate high school experience. For that reason, Cincinnatus will also field two younger teams to go along with his senior-based varsity squad that'll play in the American Legion ranks. Anyone born in 1999 or after is eligible to participate in the American Legion baseball season. All players from Carbon and Emory County are welcome to join tryouts. For more information, you are encouraged to contact Coach Cincinnatus at 820-8379. You'll find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
Brand new week of Drive Time Sports, and we're going to continue to wrap up the 2017-2018 high school sports season. Last week, we started with baseball and softball. We'll continue that trend today. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon High School baseball team joining us in studio right now. Carbon finished second at the state tournament, falling to Grantsville in the state championship game. Coach, a pleasure to get you back in today. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Coach, it's been a little over a week since the high school baseball season came to a close for Carbon. You guys finished second in the state tournament. We knew it was going to be difficult once you guys suffered a loss to Grantsville in the quarterfinals. You and I had talked about that. We had you on over the phone. You guys found a way to maneuver back through the one-loss bracket, which in itself is very difficult with the pitch restriction that the state has placed this year at this classification. You guys get back to the state title game. Hit the ball well, couldn't muster up enough runs to force that decisive third game.
Yeah, Jordan, it was a long week for us. Obviously, you mentioned it. We spoke on the phone after Thursday's loss to Grantsville, which in my opinion was a state championship game. The winner of that game was definitely going to be, you know, in my opinion, the winner on Saturday afternoon in a state championship game. But we came up a little short there. You know, we work our way back. A lot of things went right for us. A lot of things didn't. We have a six-hour rain delay Saturday morning. End up beating a good Manti team who caught fire at the right time at the end of the season. And then puts us against Grantsville again. And they just came out and swung a good bat. The first three innings, they were on fire. They jumped on our pitching. And not that our pitching wasn't good. I thought our pitching was good. I thought Nate Olson, our starter that day, did a great job of just throwing strikes. It's what we asked him to do. Adrian Sanchez came in and did the exact same thing, and they just swung the bat really well the first three innings and jumped out to a big lead. Like you said, we had a lot of hits. We got out hit 12-11 in the game, but we got outscored, 12-4. So, again, I couldn't be prouder of our kids this year. You know, we had a goal in mind of a region championship that we accomplished. We had a goal in mind of a state championship that we came up, a little bit short. But to walk out of there as a runner-up, with all the things, that you go through in a season, it's extremely difficult. And you mentioned a pitch count thing. When you get into tournament play, I don't think people even understand how that comes into play. I know a lot of people in the stands were wanting to know why I pulled a pitcher out here, why I did this. There's reasons. I don't just pull them out because I want to. It's just not the time of day to pull somebody out. But, you're trying to look, can you save a pitcher to be able to throw the next day or in 2 days? Obviously, you really can't play for the games ahead of you if you don't win the game you're in now. But, there's a lot of decisions that go into that, especially with this pitch count. It makes it extremely difficult. But I couldn't be prouder of the way our guys battled through the loser's bracket and played for a state title. And I give Grantsville a lot of credit. They beat us twice. They were the better team that weekend. When it came right down to it, they swung a better bat than we did the first game. That was the decisive game on Thursday where, we had our opportunities and just couldn't muster up a run or two. And I think if we could have got a run or two on the board early in that game, I think it changes that whole game around. And we end up winning a state title. But, a lot of ifs, ands, and buts go along with games, no matter what level you're coaching at or what sport it is. And you have to live with what your results are. And I told my guys at the beginning of the season, I told them this the last day of the season, all I can expect is that you're happy with the results at the end of the year. If you're happy with your effort, you're happy with what your effort got you, then I'm going to be happy as a coach. If you're not happy with it, then I have a hard time stomaching that as a coach because I feel like I didn't do my job to get the best out of my guys. But, I think our guys were happy with the second place. Obviously, we wanted a state championship, but I think they walked out of there knowing they gave their best effort this year, and I think they're happy with what they got.
You knew you had an uphill battle once you had to go through the one-loss bracket, so you get back to the state championship against Grantsville. What approach do you take to that first game, knowing that if you beat them that game, you have they're almost in the same situation that you're in. Maybe you're a little bit further down on pitching, but it's not as if they're going to have their best to throw at you in that second game either. So what approach did you take going into that contest?
We wanted to use... We had three or four pitchers in mind to use for that game, and we were hoping that we could just out-hit Grantsville. We knew they still had one of their best pitchers to throw. They legitimately had three really good starters on the year that carried their load. And, you know, they'd already went through their two starters and had their third to throw at us, and we knew that. We knew we were going to see a quality pitcher that day, and he was. I mean, he did a great job in throwing at us. You know, I was just hoping that our guys could hold them down a little bit more. You know, we made a couple errors in the one inning, you know, that led to, I think, a six-run inning for them too, a five- or six-run inning that if we you don't make those errors, you know, and you only give up maybe one run in that inning, it changes the whole complex of the game too. But, you know, our approach definitely was to – we knew we were going to have to swing the bats. And you look at what we did after Thursday in our games, I think we had 56 hits or something in four games, which that's a good amount of hitting. I mean, I thought we did a great job after Thursday in swinging the bats. They were a little bit quiet against Union Friday morning, and I know we had some lag Friday morning. We felt like we got kicked in the stomach Thursday night, which we did, and we still brought that attitude to the ballpark Friday morning, and I know I brought it. I know the kids brought it, and it took a little bit of a rain delay and me getting upset and kind of lighting a fire under our guys, saying, you know, we can sit and mope about what happened last night, or we can make the best of the situation and go out on top. You decide, and our kids decided they wanted to go out on top, and I really applaud them for their effort after the rain delay with Union. And then we never looked back after that. You know, we swung the bats, we played great defense, our pitchers did a great job, and we firmly decided at that point in time that, you know, we were going to quit moping about what happened Thursday night and us not winning, and we were going to give our best effort for the rest of the tournament. And that's what I'm most proud of our guys, because we were not giving a very good effort Friday, and not to take anything away from Union, but we were going through the motions. We were still feeling picked on, that things didn't go our way. And you know, that's hard. You're dealing with young kids. And even me as a coach, you know, I don't want to use the word let down, but I felt, you know, I just felt like we just let an opportunity slip through our fingers. And I was thinking about what I could have done different to help our team out that day. And the bottom line was, we just didn't get some hits when we needed it to. There really wasn't anything else we could do. But I really applaud our guys. And, you know, and our output for Saturday was to get through that game. And then if we could force a winner-take-all game, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, again, you're going to get into their pitching. They're already into yours. It comes down to who swings the bat the best and who makes the fewest errors in that point in time. And, it, you know, anybody can do that. So we were hoping to get that far. We just came up short.
Again, we're being joined right now by manager Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbondale baseball team. Coach, I know the all-state teams haven't been released yet, but you guys were well-represented on the all-region 14 squad, to no surprise, 7-0. So you guys, you definitely earned that recognition throughout the year, and you guys are right up there with I think you had the most.
We did. Again, seven guys on our all-region 14 team. Cody Lowe was the region 14 MVP and well-deserved, and you know, I don't like to make predictions because it's out of my hands, but, you know, he should be, and I'm pretty positive will be, a first-team All-Stater. Joining him on that first team was Ty Anderson, who had a great year, you know, swung a bat and played a great shortstop for us. Cesar Lea, a kid, you know, a foreign exchange student who moved into the area this year for us, you know, was awesome to have. And what a treat to be around this young man who, you know, was obviously so far away from home and brought a great attitude to our program. And, you know, he was just fun to be around. Zach Bradley and Nate Olson round out that first team all region, and two kids who, you know, seniors who did a lot for our program in 4 years and are truly deserving of that honor. And then on our second team, you know, we had a couple of juniors, actually three juniors, Anthony Jones, Colin Lewis, and Braxton Bennett, you know, all three juniors who will be back in our program next year, all made second team all region for us. So, you know, well represented, and I'm proud of those guys for acquiring that honor. You know, we had two academic all region players in Triton Abeda and Nate Olson, and then of course Nate Olson was an academic all-stater for us. So a lot of accolades for our group this year, and you know, I know that's going to carry over to the all-state teams by the Deseret News. I think we'll be well represented on the first and second team when those teams come out. I'll be very disappointed if we don't have four or five guys who receive academic all-state honors when that comes out, because these guys really truly deserve it, and you know, they put a lot of effort into it, and I hope they're rewarded for their efforts.
Now that the high school baseball season is done, Coach, I know there's always a lot of emphasis put on, you know, the summer league bowl and what these kids can do, the returners that you have next season. So this year you guys will have three teams at the Legion ranks for development, and of course that 19 and under league That's going to be the, I guess we could call it the main attraction. But tryouts for Helper American Legion will actually begin this evening.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is going to be a probably the busiest summer I've ever been involved with. You know, we've always had the American Legion team and Helper, and then we've got our American Legion team and Price. That's probably going on their 9th or 10th year now, I think, with Willie, and that's been a great accomplishment to give guys in our area another opportunity to play. You know, with the numbers that we have at the high school, I thought it's going to be great to offer more baseball. We, you know, American Legion, we've talked about it, Jordan. The teams have kind of declined over the years around the state because of so much travel ball and other leagues that are going on and just everything else. But we've done a great job the past couple years of getting American Legion teams back involved, and we've got a really big group of teams coming back this year that are going to include Taylorsville. Salem Hills is going to come out and play this year. Pleasant Grove is coming back. Teams like Sky Ridge that are still finishing up their high school season. Successful programs who are going to play Legion ball. And with doing that, we're able to have a 17 and under American Legion League, which is, Utah's always had one. It's just been the teams have been more up in the Logan-Layton area, and it's been too much of a travel for a team like us to compete in that. But having these teams that are a little bit closer to Helper, now with a couple more St. George schools, we're able to offer a 17 and under program, too, that'll be sponsored by American Legion, where they'll have a state tournament. And so we'll have a 19U team, a 17U team, and then we are putting a team back in Utah's Perfect Game League out of Utah County that's going to be made up of incoming freshmen and freshmen. And we feel like that's going to be very beneficial for those guys that are coming into that program and see what they can do for high school ball next year. So three teams this year. We're going to have plenty of baseball going on. So you basically look at our three teams out of our program and then the Price American Legion League. So four teams just in the Carbon County area. Plenty of baseball for these kids. They're not going to be a night during the week where if you don't want to go watch a baseball game somewhere, you're not going to be able to do that. And I hope we have some quality baseball. I know we've got some kids off our senior group this year that are all going to play, Legion ball for us again, and even maybe a returner or two from last year's group that graduated. I know we have some older guys that are eligible to play. So I'm excited to see who comes out this evening. Again, you mentioned at 6 p.m. in Helper at the American Legion Field. If you fall into one of those categories and you're wanting to come out and play, I'm anticipating actually having to make some cuts out of our summer ball, which is unfortunate. Maybe we will, maybe we won't, but just looking at numbers, there may be some cuts that have to be made, but competition is what makes you great. And I tell my guys every day, you have to compete. You've got to be willing to put forth, that I don't know how to explain it, but you can't be afraid to fail. So many kids won't come out and play because they're afraid they're going to get cut or they're afraid they're not going to play. If that's the attitude you have, then that's probably the result you're going to get. But don't be afraid to come out. If you get cut, your first year, there's always a second year or third year, whatever you have going on, to come back and get better. And that's usually what this summer ball is for, is to give guys an opportunity to get a second chance to further their baseball skills so they can come and try out again at the high school next year. And if you don't do that, it's going to put you further down the road because these guys are playing all summer long and getting better. So it's important. We want a successful program. We just finished runner up in the state. I told my junior class, you have some big shoes to fill, but that's a great group and they're going to need help from incoming freshmen, incoming sophomores, whatever it is, in order for us to reach our goals next year. So I'm excited about the summer ball starting up. And hopefully, we have some great ball games to offer people all summer long.
Definitely. Looking forward to talking about the Legion teams as well. Coach, thank you so much for taking out the time to join us today. And congratulations on a great high school season.
Thanks, Jordan. I do appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbondale baseball team. We'll be catching up with Coach Cincinnatus relatively soon as we continue to talk American Legion baseball. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more baseball talk coming your way. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher. We'll make the rounds in the major league ranks and recap a little bit of everything that's happening as we close in on the 50-game mark in the new season. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Here comes a comeback.
The kid is back, back on track, and everybody loves a comeback. We're going to continue on with the baseball scene, but step away from the local side. Let's talk Major League Baseball. 50 games deep into the season, nearly 50 games deep into the season. I think we have clarity in the American League. The National League is still in a spot, a lot of surprises, let's put it that way. Although I do believe some teams are figuring it out. Joining us right now over the phone to bounce around and talk about the storylines, we have Bill Lasky, who is a former big league pitcher, now works as an analyst for the San Francisco Giants on NBC Sports Bay Area. He joins us every Monday to talk baseball. Bill, great to hear from you again. Thank you.
Oh, it's great. And again, finishing out the last couple weeks here in May, going into the summer months, standings have changed. Teams that were hot aren't hot, and teams that weren't hot are getting hot. So it's that time of the year. The weather's starting to get warmer, and you're starting to see a little bit more games between the leaderboard to the bottom of the board. You're trying to separate the first-place teams to the teams that are struggling. So now you're starting to see a little bit more after about 40 to 50 games into the season.
Yeah, and the NL has been kind of wacky. I mean, the Atlanta Braves, who may be the most entertaining team in baseball, they hold the top spot in the National League East. The Arizona Diamondbacks were hot in the West out of the gate. They've now lost 9 out of 10 and ran into some injury issues. The Brewers are at the top of the Central. I don't believe that's a big surprise, because I think a lot of people thought that the Brewers could make a play for the NL Central with some of the moves that they made in the offseason. Really, I mean, the East and the West has been crazy in the National League throughout the first 45 games of the season.
They sure have. And, you know, of course, I follow the Giants here in San Francisco, and a lot of the times they always said the National League West was the strongest division, but injuries have plagued everyone from the top to the bottom, where you can go pick out certain players in each team, and each team has lost star players. I agree with you. I think Atlanta's just gelling with their youth and some of their veteran guys. And then you start, you know, pairing out the Central with St. Louis and Milwaukee. Milwaukee started slow. Now they're in first place. They're starting to play better. But it really gets down to pitching and who's got the stronger staff. And it always comes down to the bullpen. And each team has suffered, again, in their rotation or in their bullpen.
Let's start with the NL West. Justin Turner recently returned for the Dodgers, a team that's been struggling all year long. They get one from the Marlins. They showed some heavy offensive production in that series. But, Bill, for me, the impressive thing was the Dodgers took three straight from Washington, and they had to go through Scherzer and Strasburg to get it. Does Justin Turner make that much of a difference on this team?
I think it gives that strong part in that third spot in your order. You always want to be middle strong, and he's always been there. And with him being out, they struggle to fill spots in that 3-4-5 order. Kemp's having a good year, too. And I just thought those three games were huge for them as they were going south so fast. And now they've got some breath. They got the Colorado Rockies now, who just came through San Francisco and split with the Giants 2 games out of 4. So this is, again, you know, the rock'em sock'em robots. Who's going to hit who first, and who's going to land, and who's the next one coming up? Because if you look in the NL West, the Giants are 500 and they're only 2 games back. You mentioned the Diamondbacks going south real fast, and of course Pollock with that injury is really hurting them. And Colorado's right on the tails of being in first place. And you know, that whole division, I think, is going to be that way the whole season. Of course, I'm in favor with the Giants being here in San Francisco and Madison Bumgarner starting to do his rehab, and Melanson also. And now you're looking at Mac Williamson, who's starting to come back after concussion. So you're going to have a little more offense going. But they have a tough road trip coming ahead. They're playing Houston 2 games. Then they go into Chicago, and then they're back Memorial Day at your place in Colorado. So a tough road trip coming up, and we'll see how this NL West goes in another week or two.
Mentioned Justin Turner. You mentioned Colorado. You and I had briefly talked about DJ LeMahieu, who's on the DL for the Rockies right now. But you also mentioned A.J. Pollock. And again, I'm not going to contribute all of Arizona's struggles to the injury to Pollock. But again, when you're talking about offense, this guy leads the team in batting average, home runs, and runs batted in. And he's got a slugging percentage of like 620 with a 350 OBP. He's out for 2 months, and for a team that has lost 9 out of their last 10, boy, that is a devastating blow. They haven't been healthy all year, Bill. I mean, when we talk about Lamb at the corner, he hasn't been healthy for Arizona all year. But losing Pollock, I mean, that's a lot of zing out of that lineup.
It sure has. And the thing about it, 2 years ago, if you remember, and I'm sure you do, where he hurt himself sliding at home right to one of the last spring training games, and he was out most of the year, and they struggled throughout that whole year. And then when he came back, this year especially, hitting in the five hole behind Goldschmidt, it was just a two-punch back-to-back. And now the pressure starts going on with the other players in that lineup, and they're just not gelling offensively. He brings so much, and you just threw the numbers out there. Every one of those numbers are overachieving numbers. With his speed also and leadership, it's just a huge blow for them, and they just can't overcome it right now. And even now, their starting pitching is starting to give up some runs. Today they're in Milwaukee, tough series over there, and Greinke's pitching. And that's going to be a tough series for them at Milwaukee, as we just said, Milwaukee being in first place, and they're hitting the ball very well.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky as we talk Major League Baseball. If we jump over to the American League, boy, that East, it's going to be fun. I know throughout the entire year, the Yankees and the Red Sox at the top of the AL East. I mean, the Indians are at the top of the Central. You got the Astros, to no surprise, at the top of the NL West. I think the American League, for the most part, has played out over the first 45 games, like many could have predicted, Bill, unlike the National League.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, it took Cleveland a little bit to jump into the mix there as leaders, but they're starting to play well now. They picked up Melky Cabrera and had a great game, his first game back. Yankees in Boston, I didn't think that's going to be a dead red all the way through the month of September. Those two teams are just so good. One will win the division, the other one will get the wild card, no doubt, because they'll have the wins to do it. On the Houston side, you can't overlook their starting staff. The top three or lowest earned run average leaders are 1, 2, and 3 in their rotation, and they're just going to keep getting stronger by the month. So it is starting to develop who's the leaders in the American League, not so in the National League, as you say. But I'm just, you know, when you look at Boston and the Yankees, it seems like every day there's a highlight from one of their games on somebody making a great play or hitting a ball out of the ballpark or throwing a shutout ball. So both those teams are showing exactly what they made through the offseason.
Bill, I got to ask you about some pitching if we're talking about the American League, especially in the American League East. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Rays, because Kevin Cash, manager of the Rays, tried something very, very unique. And I know that as the game evolves, there's always nuances that will change. What Cash decided to do was actually start a reliever to go through hitters 1, 2, and 3 and then bring in the starter, which allows him to eat up some innings once you get past the first lineup, because all the surprises, I guess, could be the first time through the lineup before hitters actually start to figure some things out. He goes with Sergio Romo. It worked out. Ryan Yarbrough was able to come in. He got the win 5-3. Didn't necessarily work out the second day, but this is something that you just don't see in baseball. And with you being a former pitcher, I got to get your thoughts on this.
It sure has changed the outlook of starting pitching. Sergio Romo was here for so many years, winning the World Series and being a closer when they beat Detroit. It just took me by surprise to see how all this has changed through all the different discoveries of who's going to pitch to who, what's better. And I think you and I talked about this so many times. The first inning is one of the hardest innings for starters. You come out of the bullpen and you got to get, you know, situated with the game, and the top three hitters are usually pretty strong in every lineup. And the first time Romo does it, he strikes out the first three guys of the Angels, comes out of the game, starter comes in, and it works. Second time it didn't work because they used relievers after. It is a different part of the game, and Tampa Bay struggling right now. They can try all this, you know, with all the different stats and things of pitcher against hitters. You know, he starts two games in a row. That's never happened in a game of baseball. So, you know, it is changing the game. People are trying to discover new ways of getting people out and try to, you know, do different aspects of the pitching staff. It works. Tampa Bay, of course, is trying everything different. They've been doing things like that in the last few years, and it's worked and it hasn't worked. But that team is definitely doing it. They have the opportunity to do it, being lower part in a division. But at the same time, I'm old school baseball. I'm sorry. I want my starters to go seven innings in their mind or even trying to close it. And the games have changed, and you talk to players in my era, and just the same thing with launch angles and exit velocity, that nothing was even talked about 20, 30 years ago like that. And I had Bill Madlock on the show here on radio a couple weeks ago, and he was talking, it's so difficult to teach hitting now because everybody wants to hit the long ball instead of trying to hit all over the field like you're taught years ago. So the game's changing. Is it better? Bands are still coming out. Is it harder to try to diagnose from an analyst? It is, because you just don't understand why, but all these analytic people are trying different things, and most of your analytic people never even put a glove on their hand or spikes on their feet. So numbers are changing the game. The way to direct things are definitely changing. We're just going to see if it's going to work or not.
You know, Bill, I was looking over the National League when I read about this story over the weekend, and one of the best closers that I just don't think we talk enough about, because let's be real, he doesn't have a lot of save opportunities, would be Raziel Iglesias for the Cincinnati Reds, okay? This is a team that's won 16 games, and I think...
Great name. I mean, he can throw.
He can throw.
I watched him. He came through the Reds, and the guy's got a bullet arm.
He's fantastic. He has 8 saves, and the Reds have 16 wins. Okay, so is that a scenario where you could see Ruggleman, who's in the interim position anyways, would it make sense to throw Iglesias out there to start a couple of games? Because this guy's not getting enough save opportunities to begin with.
Yeah, and you just wonder, you know, you get that inning, you know, if you don't throw in 3 or 4 days, you get that inning sometimes just to get a warm-up inning. Sometimes it's hard as hell to get in there and get acclimated with no save because you're mentally strong about getting the save, holding runners. I just don't think they're going to use somebody like that as a bullet arm. You're going to have to pick and choose on who you throw in those scenarios. Mostly it's guys that are veteran players that can kick in. Sergio Romo, of course, is the latter part of his career, and he's open to do anything to stay in the game. But at the same time, I just don't think they're going to do stuff like that to your start, you know, your closers or top guns, as you say, in the bullpen. It's just going to be more or less an experiment, and who's going to try it next, and are they going to continue to keep doing it, and we'll see if this works or not. In the meantime, I just don't think anybody in the National League is going to do it. I just don't know, you know, because every team is different. Did you see the Atlanta Braves being in first place? I sure didn't,
nope.
But they sure are playing well. You start looking at some of these teams that are building. We talked about the Astros years ago, and look how strong they did by cleaning house and rebuilding with youth. And that youth is gelling together, and they're going to be right back in the thick of things to win another World Series. So the game has changed. We are here to watch it, to see how it's going to evolve, to see if these changes are going to be something down the road to look at.
We'll end with this, Bill. Speaking of the Atlanta Braves, they released Jose Bautista. I thought it was an odd fit to begin with. You have Johan Camargo at third base, and you also have a rising star in Austin Riley coming up through the minors. This kid just continues to slash. He's all the way up from, I believe he started, if I remember, in single A. He's already up to triple A already, so it just didn't seem like a fit for Bautista. Is this the end of his major league career? I can't see him catching on anywhere else.
No, and you know, when the Giants played Atlanta, that was his first game up. And he made some decent plays at third base. The bat just didn't have that super whip that he had. And getting up in age, I just don't think he's going to hook on. If he does, it would have to be an American League team as a DH. And I just don't think anybody is going to take a look at him. I think one of the reasons why he came over the Braves, the GM was part of the Toronto Blue Jays when he was there, so he knew him a little bit and he gave him an opportunity. But, you know, you try your best. It's like Melky Cabrera in Cleveland. They're giving in their last ditch effort to see if something's going to click or not, but I just don't see anyone trying to jump on Bautista now. They probably saw the same thing you and I did, saw the box scores and not too many hits, not too many home runs, and those were the things that made him Jose Bautista when he was with Toronto. That did so well. So it's he had a great career. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of good in his resume, and there's been a few things that he did that I don't think he's real proud of. But at the same time, a good baseball player and some good baseball that we've seen out of him.
Bill Lasky again taking out the time to join us. Bill, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, I'm jumping on at Lasky19 on Twitter. I'm on there a lot just talking Giants baseball. you can always pull me up on Saturdays on KNBR 680 here in San Francisco. We're live off of that, and got a great show coming up this weekend. I'm pulling back some players from the past, and we're trying to talk to the Cubs. And I got Jody Davis coming on, Bob Dernier, as well as Lee Smith, the big closer. So good baseball talk there, and it's great to reminisce on some of the players I pitched against and some of their memories of being a Cub.
Definitely, definitely. Bill, I always look forward to the segments. Thank you so much for the time, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you again, and I appreciate including you, and I hope the listeners love talking and listening to baseball as we chat every Monday.
Always fun to talk some Major League Baseball with Bill Lasky here on the show. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll return for the final touches on this Monday edition of the show right after this.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM KOAL.
Back for the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Let's talk NFL football for just a moment. OTAs are underway across the league. Now, they're not mandatory, but there are some notable players not attending, while others, they're there. And when I say others, I'm talking star players. I mean, there are some star players that aren't, some star players that are. You know, and there's a long list. Look, Julio Jones is not there for the Atlanta Falcons. Jalen Ramsey, I don't believe Jalen Ramsey has reported yet for Jacksonville. It's a big deal. Aaron Donald, not there for the Rams. He's holding out. Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, not there for the Patriots. These are just some of the names to throw out. Odell Beckham Jr. is not there for the Giants as well. Le'Veon Bell's not going to be there. When you look at it from a Patriot point of view, do you care that Tom Brady's not at OTAs?
No, I don't. Or Gronk or any of these guys, because when it comes mandatory OTAs, they'll be there because certain players have certain bonuses attached to those mandatory OTAs.
I have a problem with it.
They should be there.
I have a problem with it, and I'll tell you why I have a problem with it. As I give you the list of players that aren't attending OTAs, Odell Beckham, premier wide receiver, right? Julio Jones, premier wide receiver, not a quarterback. Aaron Donald, not a quarterback. Mark Ingram, not a quarterback. Rob Gronkowski, not a quarterback. There's a reason why in the NFL, quarterbacks are the highest paid players on the team. Mandatory or not, five Super Bowls or not, in order to continue a championship pedigree, your quarterback, who is your leader, has to be at OTAs. And I know you're a Tom Brady guy, and look, I've gone to bat for Tom Brady multiple times here on the show. I believe he is the greatest quarterback to ever live. That guy needs to be at OTAs. Okay, he's the quarterback of a team that just lost to the Super Bowl. That guy needs to be at OTAs.
Probably, but he's not, and he's not going to be there.
That's a problem.
Yeah, he's pissed off.
What does this guy have to be mad about?
I think he's upset with the Alex Guerrero situation. I think the way they lost, the Malcolm Butler benching. I think there's a lot of things that played into it, and I think that's why he's not there, because he's pissed off.
So is that fair to his teammates that are there? I mean, this is the point
I'm trying to make. It's not fair, but
Tom Brady, for as great as this guy is, and we're going to have to continue this conversation tomorrow because we're just about out of time, for as great as he is, has no reason to be angry with the organization, because this guy has been put in a position to succeed year in and year out. There are quarterbacks out there in the league that have never had a chance, that are top-notch quarterbacks that have never had a chance. Andrew Luck is a guy that has played with a lacerated kidney, and the Colts have done nothing to give this guy any protection. Tom Brady has won five championships. I get that he's 40-plus years old. I get all this. That guy needs to be there at OTAs. Needs to be there. I think it's that simple.
Yeah. He should, but he's not. And he's continually going to do what he's going to do, and that's work out on his own and travel and whatever else he's doing.
I guess when you win five Super Bowls, you can do whatever you'd like. I want to thank Bill Lasky and Coach Jeff Sinceris for taking out the time to come on the show. Tomorrow, we'll talk more local and national sports. Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbondale Track and Field team will join us to put the final touches on that aspect of the high school sports season. Have a fantastic day. We will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We're out.